All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Welcome to episode 1126 of the Geek News Central podcast. It's Monday, June 27th. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com. And listeners just like you, great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. You support this show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider or just paypal.me/geeknews. You can always pick up Ohana gear at cafepress.com/Ohana store. Hey, want to give a warm welcome to the Ohana, longtime listeners and viewers of the show. Thank you so much for being here. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. Lots of stuff kicking. Lots to talk about for sure. And so I'm looking forward to sharing tonight and hope that you're all doing well. Of course, if you're a brand new listener to the show, I want to welcome you. And I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com. And for some reason, I've got half a page today up. I don't know why that's happening. We'll have to check out the converter. But get over to geeknewscentral.com. And while you're over there, you'll find the place to subscribe right on the right-hand column of the website. That'll get you all synced up so that you can subscribe via iTunes, via Android, email, lots of ways to get connected with the show, Google Play, Stitcher, or by a standard RSS feed, of course. So we've got a newsletter you can sign up for as well on the website. That'll get you connected up, and that way you'll get all the show notes. Basically, everything I talk about today will be delivered to you via email and with all the links that are in there. Hey, of course, you can reach out to the show at any time. Let's see if I've got this stuff queued back up. Yes, I do. You can send email at geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter @geeknews. So lots of ways to get connected. Of course, you can follow on Google Plus, on Facebook. You can watch the show on the Roku, on the app, via the Tech Podcast channel on the Apple TV. You can listen on Amazon Echo by telling Alexa to play the latest edition of this podcast. Stitcher, of course, blueberry.com, lots of places to listen. Of course, all our partner shows as well. You'll want to stay connected with the Pro Gear Show, the Gadget Professor, Health Tech Weekly, No Better Than Average, all those shows. Of course, the New Media Show with Rob Greenlee and I, which we couldn't do this past Saturday because Rob had a out internet connection. So we were kind of stuck. We didn't have the ability to do a show. And then his internet came back late in the afternoon on Saturday. So it was too bad. But we'll be hanging out at Podcast Movement here in a few days. So I'm looking forward to meeting up with Rob in Chicago. Of course, I leave for Chicago on Friday. I actually go hang out with family for a few days and then come in back into Chicago on the 6th. Very, very bizarre tonight on the lower third. I got it to work. But one piece is not. So anyway, I've got the ability now to put up the screen. And just got to figure out why it's doing something odd on the what I normally do with the show. And maybe because of some of the setup I had yesterday is that I typically take a screen capture from a secondary monitor. And we're using a new software with from a new tech called NDI Converter. And it's a internet-based protocol that sends video over. And typically I can just have it stuck on the other monitor and it just automatically scales fine. But as soon as I move it to the other monitor, something happens. So something has gotten resized, but we'll continue the show. No biggie as far as the show goes tonight. So let's look at my little stack of stuff I want to talk about before we get fully into the show. And so just as a forewarning, I missed Game of Thrones last night. Did not get to watch it. So I'm going to get the show wrapped up today and get it published and then probably start watching Game of Thrones about 10 p.m. Hawaiian time. So I've done a successful day of staying away from spoilers. So I'm going into it without having to have basically been busted and not know what's or already know what's going on. Some folks were trying to talk about it today. I said, told them to stop. So I'll get to watch the finale tonight. But really this past weekend, of course, Shoko's been in Vegas. She just left Vegas today, headed to San Diego. She's going to be hanging out with her friend there for a couple of days before she comes home. So it's still been pretty quiet here, and it's allowed me to work on my presentation that I'm going to be giving at Podcast Movement. Lots to do there. And, of course, my team at Raw Voice Blueberry has been working on the announcements that we were making. We announced our PowerPress Sites product. So really jazzed about that we got that on the street and released. And, of course, we had some additional levels to that product line that they're going to be coming. Did the Podcast Awards ceremony yesterday, and just like doing any other online ceremony, it was a little rough. Queuing times and all that stuff with folks, hearing that they had won 30 seconds after we announced it live and then get them Skyping in. Just typically trying to do stuff online, that's really, really hard. But some good lessons learned and some very high potential, some very big changes coming to Podcast Awards in the future. Not really going to get into it today. Don't need to. I've got the bigger fish to fry over the next couple of weeks. But that's kind of what's going on. Of course, this show tonight is sponsored by our good friends over at GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy's been with us since July of 2005. So we're just about on our 11th year anniversary here in the next few days. As always, GoDaddy has got lots of great offers available to all of you. And we want you to take advantage of those. And you have been. We're having a record. Maybe I'm going to jinx myself. But we've been having a record, absolute record month with GoDaddy. Lots of sales, lots of people using the codes. So June must be the month where everyone's deciding to pick up a new domain name, whether it be a hosting product. My son and I were talking about it, and I was kind of chatting him. I said, why do you think June's a big month? And historically, it has always been a big month of sales. Anytime we've, ran GoDaddy. And we're talking about kids coming off school, summer projects, businesses, basically rebuilding websites, the whole nine yards. But he really attributed more, he thought, was to maybe like classmates that he'd been working with in computer science and writing stuff. They were all setting up sites and doing things. So maybe he's right. I really don't know what to attribute the big boost to, except that June has been typically a big month for us. But I tell you what, the full line of stuff there. Domain names, of course, we can get you 30% off discount code on new product purchases. 99cent.com, so you get to use one of those one time. Of course, we've got the website builder, economy hosting, managed WordPress hosting. All those include a free domain. All start at $1 a month. So really kind of pick your product line that you really want to use. And that website builder is great for business owners. Of course, the hosting plans are typically aligned with lots of ability to add lots of modules to them. Of course, the managed WordPress hosting is just as it sounds. They take care of a lot of stuff that you don't have to worry about with security and all that. So definitely take a look at all these products and services. Again, you can find all of these codes at geeknesscentral.com/GoDaddy. So what I'm going to do tonight, let's see here, that is DSK2. Let's move this bad boy down a little bit. There we go. For those of you watching the video, you can see that. And then let me find out. Okay, there we go. That's gone. So I'm just doing a little house cleaning. I should have done it before I started the show tonight, but things have just been absolutely crazy here from a being busy perspective. Let's see, is that going to work? Yes, okay. So we've got a couple of things up that we wanted to get up. All right. Going back to my short stack here. Again, kind of that's what's going on. And not a lot else. Kind of got the big things behind us. And now it's really on to having fun in Chicago and seeing friends and meeting up with podcasters we haven't seen for a while. Sharing all our new product and service announcements. I was going to have a big announcement tomorrow, but I think we need one more day on the code before we release one of the products we're getting ready to put on the street. And I'm really excited about this one in a very big way. And it's without giving it away, it's going to definitely expand, our social presence for podcasters and something unique that I don't think folks are using or seeing. So we'll have that announcement. And then on Thursday, another big announcement on Thursday as well. That press release is going out with it from a partner of ours, but we've got all the marketing material ready. The product is ready. We're actually running through final demos tomorrow. So exciting to be able to announce the three major product announcements for Podcast Movement. Share that, of course, with our normal products and services. Okay. So anyway, I've got through my tech stack. And I'm going to try one more time to pull this file or this browser over here and explode you. And I don't understand why it's doing that. Very, very odd. Okay, well, it is what it is. And the show must go on. So let me go ahead and load. We won't have as many visuals tonight. And let me go ahead and I saw something very, very cool today. It was the title of the show. Google is making what they're calling a toy system that teaches kids how to code. And it's amazing. It really is. And I don't know what it's going to cost, but it's called Project Blocks. Blocks is a system of toy blocks that kids connect together to control other toys and learn the fundamentals of coding in the process. A bunch of blocks with arrows on them, for instance, could be used to direct a robot. Google intentions is for blocks is to teach the logic behind coding so that kids can pick up the basic skills as they play and later transfer that knowledge to real-world applications. And the demo video that they put up, which is about 3 minutes and 30 seconds, definitely talks about the educator kind of angle on it. And while I think the educator angle is cool, if I had young kids, this is what I would want in my house for the kids to, it's just smart what they've done here. And bring this over. And it's, you can think you can build radios, you can control robots, and the modules have their own functions, volume controls, timers, directions, intensity levels, you name it. So this is absolutely incredible what they're doing here. And it's going to be a platform. And obviously the blocks themselves kind of have the coding built in, but the kids will be able to assemble stuff in sequences. And it's a collaboration between research at Google Creative Lab and researchers from Stanford and Chiang Mai University. And development on this began in 2013. And it's being unveiled now so that Google can start gauging developer interest and finding partners who want to work with Block Toys. But again, this is going to be, initially targeted at educators, which is cool. I just wonder what a kit's going to cost, for a parent to be able to buy this. And, I don't know how many years of use you can get out of it and how big these projects are going to get, but, maybe it's the equivalent of a Rector set for many of us that, when we were younger, that's what the thing that parents bought to make kids creative or Legos or, whatever it may be. Now it's, Minecraft. It's just, really taking it to another level. We are about ready to enter orbit near Jupiter or around Jupiter's polar orbit. they over the past 2 weeks, the NASA team is basically been getting ready for a 35-minute burn of its rocket motor. And tomorrow they're going to start pressurizing fuel systems. They're starting to shut down non-essential gear. So we're very, very close. And of course, this insertion into the orbit around Jupiter on July 4th will, be the big finale here to get all these systems or get this satellite into the right position and to start getting some images back. But they have sent some stuff and put some stuff up within the IR spectrum, some of the clearest infrared images that they've seen so far. So Jupiter's definitely right out there in front, and now is, it's basically a big ball in the windshield. And let me see if I can show you this image, this infrared image that they put up. And there we go. So this is one of the clearer photos that or infrared photos that they've ever been able to produce. And we're going to see a lot more as we get closer. So this multi-year journey is about to come to an end, and we're going to fast approach Jupiter and get a few years science out of it. So we keep our fingers crossed for the good burn on the 4th of July. Moving out of the science area, interesting move, and this is a first. A judge has dismissed a movie piracy case on IP. Basically rejecting the IP address means which all these companies have been suing people. In what's believed to be a first of a kind of its ruling, a federal court in Oregon has dismissed a direct infringement complaint against an alleged movie pirate from the outset. According to the judge, linking an IP address to a pirated download is not enough to prove direct copyright infringement. Now, what's interesting about this particular individual was that his home also doubled as an adult care facility. So while he had internet available for his elderly people that were there, his family also used the internet there at the residence. It doesn't say how many people were actually are under elder care with this individual. But it's one of the reasons that the judge basically recommended dismissal. They said that they couldn't prove that this particular individual that owned that internet account was the individual that did the direct infringement. They actually referenced indirect infringement and it was not sufficient in the case to continue. So this is a big one. This is the first. And, you know, many of these cases have went essentially all the way. You know, there's been lots of prosecutions. People paid a lot of money to the movie industry on copyright infringement. And this is the first one that's been through. And using that this IP is the IP that downloaded the movie, this must be the IP that, or this must be the person that infringed. So well, this is big. It really, really is. And it's maybe the judges are getting sick of this. This particular judge has ruled favorably for accused infringers in the past as well. So I guess if you're in that particular court, you want to draw her as your judge. Two Solar City board members will consider the Tesla deal. Solar panel maker Solar City. And I tell you a little story about Solar City. When we were taking bids here to put solar cells on our home, we probably got bids from six or seven companies. Solar City at the time had two plans. They had a plan where you put the solar on your roof and then you didn't really pay them any money. You were renting the system and you paid them X number of cents per kilowatt really for the life of the installation. And they got all the tax advantages. So at the time, I think they were offering like, you know, they'd load your roof up and for whatever you created, you'd pay them 16 cents versus paying the, the electricity company here, which we pay anywhere between 30 and 36 cents, depending on oil prices. So we said, nah, we don't want to do that. I wanted the tax benefits, and that proved to be the best solution for us. As you guys know, we have a 3-year, 6-month payback on 36 panels on our roof. Absolutely thrilled so far. My bill's been $18, and I think it went up from $18.25 to $18.40 because of some regulatory stuff. So it, my bill increased 15 cents, but I'm overproducing every month, which is good by a little bit, not giving the electricity company or electric company too much extra power back because of the way the net metering here works. Is if I give them excess, they get to keep it and they don't have to give me a check. So the goal is to be 0-0 at the end of the year. But SolarCity's other pricing was the most expensive. My system cost about $1,000 a panel. In-phase converters, top-of-the-line, U.S.-made solar panels. Actually, I think they were not U.S.-made. I think they're Panasonic. So out of Korea. And, you know, so far, knock on wood, everything's been going good. But the SolarCity folks were like $48,000. They were like the high end of cost for installer. And they, you know, the sales guy's going through his pitch, and I'm like, okay, I got a bid in one hand, $36,000, $48,000 on the other. Why are we $12,000 apart? And they were just more expensive. So SolarCity's had some challenges. So for Tesla to come in and offer $2.8 billion as a takeover offer, I think SolarCity's getting a pretty good deal. Based upon the electric company's resistance and fight against solar installation here in Hawaii, they've revised through the PUC, the net metering agreement. People now are getting if I was to build a system today, brand new system with the new net metering agreements that are in place with the PUC, I would have to put on like 49 to 50 panels to get the equivalent $18.25 electric bill as compared to my 36 panels today. So another $12,000. Now, while that may not seem a lot, if you take a $400 and $450 a month electricity bill, which I had every month, and you divide that out, you know, by another $12,000. So what really ends up happening is from my 3 years and 6 month payback period, I go to 6 years and something. And also some of the tax incentives have gone away. So maybe I'm up to 7 or 8 years worth of payback. Just here in Hawaii alone, the solar industry has been devastated because of lobby interest of power companies. So if SolarCity can get $2.8 billion out of Tesla, and knowing how there is this huge battle by incumbent electric companies to squash solar, they don't want solar. They want you to be tied to them. They want to be able to get that pound of flesh out of you every month and not have solar panels on your roof. So we'll see what happens here. If this actually goes through, if this goes to acquisition, but if I was a Tesla stockholder, I'd be like, stop. Don't invest in this company. But I guess this is what Elon Musk wants. But just based upon what's happening, and maybe it's different in your state, but what's happening here in Hawaii, the solar industry in Hawaii has been decimated. There are, maybe 2/3 less folks working in the solar industry here now. We are far from saturation, but the electric company has put a lid on everything. They've actually put a cap on Oahu on the maximum number of homes that actually can have solar installed. Once they reach that cap, no one else will be able to get solar installed on their roof unless the PUC changes the rules. The monopolies and the power they have are insane. I don't think I would be dumping, based on at least what's happening here, my money into a solar company. Maybe he wants to build, become a, you know, producer. You need Solar City to put, you know, 1 million panels up or something in the desert. Maybe that's the reason, and get stuff at cost versus, you know, paying retail. But that is the, that's the gig, at least in my opinion, on solar. You know, I've traveled overseas a lot, and I've walked into Rolex stores. I've walked into, you know, a variety of high-end watch manufacturers, and always when I'm overseas, I have this little back thing nagging in the back of my back, my neck, saying, is this a real watch or is it a fake? You know, they, in many, many countries, the storefront will look like it's a Rolex store. And you roll in, and unless you have a trained eye, now, 10 years ago, you know, the knockoffs, or 15 years ago, the knockoffs were easy to see, but the counterfeits today have gotten so good that unless you have, you are absolutely assured by going to a manufacturer's website and looking up the address of a certified reseller of, you know, high-end watches, if you, you know, if that address needs to match from what's on the website, you are not guaranteed to, if you're going to buy a watch overseas, and if the price is too good to be true, it's a fake. You know, Rolexes are not on sale typically for 25% off or 50. And it just doesn't happen. You know, like, I have a good deal for you today. You know, that is, you know, the siren should go off and, you know, you need to leave. You know, buy those expensive items when you're back, you know, in your hometown, in your, you know, if you're not from the United States, find a, you know, a reputable, you know, high-end watch reseller locally. So there is an attempt right now to really try to keep counterfeit at bay. And there's something new. The folks behind what's called DNA Watch, the team has developed a method for imprinting the crystal on Swiss-made watches with a watermark that's invisible to the naked eye, but shows up under ultraviolet light. It's called Nano Watermark. It sorts fakes from genuines. Developer Nanago says that its technique uses photons working on glass, ceramic, and metal. What's more, faking the process apparently would be as difficult as counterfeiting a Swiss 50-franc note. The outcome is a series of layers of atoms that is more than 10,000 times thinner than a hair and does not in any way alter the material's properties. So, and basically, it can be scanned. Your watch will have a unique fingerprint that, when put under an ultraviolet light, can be read, and you can tell. At least the watch can be authenticated, and you can tell whether or not it's a real watch or not. They go on to say, in a machine normally used to make LEDs, the substance are deposited on the surface as vapor using lithographic printing. Certain areas are then activated in order to create the watermark in a form of atomic gymnastics. The atoms that have been activated react when exposed to ultraviolet light, instantly revealing themselves to the human eye. And they're starting to implement this on fine watches coming out of Switzerland. So I'm excited to see this kind of technology. Now, just give the counterfeiters a little while, because believe me, they will do everything in their power to copy this, because there's a huge market in fakes. Huge. You can go almost anywhere in Asia. You can walk into a watch store and buy a knockoff. They're readily available. And it used to be a knockoff Rolex. They went up. They used to be at around $200. Now a knockoff, if you're purposely buying a knockoff and you know it is, $400 to $1,000 on the knockoffs now overseas. So I guess if you want to walk around with a fake Rolex... I've had friends in the Navy that have bought them, so just we'll basically stop at that. But anyway, it's that's what's happening with the counterfeit, trying to prevent counterfeit. Google's Sundar Pichai, and I probably just destroyed his name like I destroy so many other names, is the latest target of social media hackers. Our mind is continuing to make some of the high-tech industry's elite look more than a little silly after a string of high-profile hacks, including the recent takeovers of social media accounts belonging to Mark Zuckerberg, Spotify's CEO Daniel Ek. The team appears successfully targeted Google's CEO Sundar Pichai. I've totally destroyed his name. A now-deleted string of tweets seemed to confirm the breach on his Quora profile, that's the story there. And these high-end folks are getting hacked. If they can get the high-end guys like that, those of us that are, pure minions in the scheme of things, they'd have no problem overtaking our accounts. I wouldn't think. They've gotten really, really good. All right, I'm going to make a prediction. This next product will be the product of the year that you are going to want to buy for Christmas. I'm just predicting it now. I'm going to go on record in saying so. Let me bring this up. And of course, maybe that's what's wrong. I think Firefox just crashed. All right. It's called Cosmo. Cozmo. San Francisco AI startup Anki has a great reputation. Why is that doing that? Okay, you can. Oh, that's what happened. Don't even know why that plugin's running. Anki's had a reputation for making robot cars you can race with your phone. And considering all the three founders got their start at Carnegie Mellon's Robotic Institute, there's no real surprise here. But this thing is awesome. I guarantee you, is going to be the product of the year that geeks are going to want. And, you can stop the plug-in. I keep telling Firefox to stop the specific plug-in, and it's just, man, it drives me crazy. And I've got YouTube running on another instance of Firefox, and if it dies, I think the feed will go down. So anyway, hopefully we're still up. Okay, all right. Now we'll stop it. Oh, there it goes. Now it's working again. I only lost one instance of it. Good. This is what we need. This is what happens when we're doing the show live. And I haven't had a problem with Firefox in a long time, but definitely tonight has not been the night to do this. But I wanted to show you that are those of you that are watching. I want to show you this robot. And this thing is awesome. So let's see if it loads. It's coming up. There we go. So again, Cosmo. And when you see the demo video on this, you're going to be wowed. You really, really are. It interacts with you. It has facial recognition. It's going to be cool. It controls its phones. It'll actually, if you do certain actions around it, it will actually interact and play with you. He has spatial awareness. He'll react to music you're playing, all kinds of stuff. So I predict that this particular product is going to be the thing to have for Christmas. I don't know what it's going to cost. They haven't announced a price yet. It's going to be available in October, of course, right around the time people are starting to think about what they're going to buy for Christmas. But I want one. I've already, I looked at this. I'm like, oh, man, that's going to be too cool, especially if it works around the desk and won't fall off the desk. That's even better. So, let the geek come out just a little bit and think about picking up one of these Cosmos in October when it's available. All right, Twitter adds stickers for photos and lets you search them like hashtags. I just think this is a little odd. But again, Twitter's going to let you begin adding virtual stickers to the photos you post. The company said today hundreds are available at launch, including the standard Unicode emojis and some original work from Twitter. The company is also creating collections of stickers that are pegged to the time of year in advance. Right now, there are stickers for graduation and the start of summer. So you can just basically tag up your photos with these stickers. And again, you'll be able to search them by hashtag. I guess sunglasses will be the... anyway, that's coming to Twitter. So continue to add little features here and there. All right, next up is a great interview. From file sharing to prison, a mega upload programmer that has told his story. Programmer Andrew Nam talks about the process that he went through in the 1 year and 1 day sentence he received at a Virginia court, and how he got shuffled between a variety of different prisons. And his, you know, basically he doesn't have a lot of positive things to say about the criminal justice system here in the U.S., but he fought extradition for a long time and finally just kind of gave up and decided to turn himself in. After going through 3 different lawyers in Netherlands, but he's not a citizen of the Netherlands. He's from actually Estonia, and his country's consulate didn't help out very much at all while he was in prison here in the United States. But anyway, there's a good interview about that. Some interesting takeaways. For those of you in California, researchers just found a giant cache of water underneath California. Of course, last year, researchers estimated that California had lost 63 trillion gallons of water over the course of 18 months of drought. Now, a huge reservoir of underground water, 3 times bigger than engineers thought, has been found under California, but it still won't solve the state's drought troubles. Researchers from Stanford University announced their finding in a paper today in the Proceedings of National Academy of Science. Up till now, the estimates of the amount of water beneath California's Central Valley were less than 1,000 cubic kilometers. Now researchers say the reservoir contains 2,700 cubic kilometers of usable water, or approximately 713 trillion gallons. That's several times what the state has reportedly lost. So while it won't solve California's drought, oil is part of the problem is where it was found. Earlier estimates of the size of the reservoir were low, in part because most studies only looked up to 1,000 feet underground. That made sense based on old technologies. But as the state has dried up, and they got digging tech got better, water companies have been able to go deeper and deeper. Most of the water found by Stanford Research and Survey was between 1,000 and 3,000 feet below the surface. That's still close enough to the surface to retrieve, according to the folks from Stanford. So you just got to dig a little deeper in the Silicon Valley or the San Joaquin Valley to be able to pull this water out. And believe me, they're going to dig deep to get it, because California needs the water. Let's just hope that continued drought relief happens and start to fill some reservoirs. But got a long, long, long way to go. If you're an Uber driver, Uber is giving drivers an alternative to radio with ad-free Pandora partnership. So Pandora is allowing Uber drivers to basically play free music in the car. And so within Uber's partner app, again, drivers can listen to streaming music service by authenticating with their Pandora credentials. And of course, they simply hook up the app to the vehicle's stereo using Bluetooth or aux cable and begin playing any station. This offering is only available in the United States, Australia, and New Zealand, and the markets Pandora currently supports. So I know a few of you that listen to the show are Uber drivers, so definitely get hooked up with that and quit paying your monthly payment to them. We've talked several times on this show about how helium is becoming a rare commodity in the world today, and how its reservoirs are not limitless. And of course, experts have been looming over a shortage of helium for years, but apparently they have just discovered a large reserve of helium gas in Tanzania. Using a new exploration method offers hope for the future. It turns out that the volcanic activity plays a critical role in creating new helium reserves. And according to a graduate student at Durham University, presented teams fighting at the Goldschmidt Geochemistry Conference in Japan, scientists from Durham and Oxford University collaborated with Norwegian exploratory company Helium One to combine this insight with seismic readings and geocaching samples to identify the newly discovered reserve. Now, here's the issue. While there is helium, it is intermixed with volcanic gas. So there's going to be an area that it's going to be basically kind of like a sweet zone where it's going to be not contaminated. but a little bit deeper when they start pulling out helium. They're going to have some sort of filter process to take some of these elements out that are intermixed with the helium. So, of course, the largest store of helium, nearly a billion cubic feet, was located near Amarillo, Texas, ever since lawmakers approved the stockpiling back in 1925. In the 90s, U.S. Congress voted to sell off those helium reserves, essentially privatizing it. The helium prices went up and down wildly since then, and currently today in the United States, we use more helium than we basically have ourselves. They have to import helium today. So they figure within 25 years, because of the helium shortage, helium balloons for parties could cost as much as $100 per balloon if it was based on an open market, you know, as the prices have went in 25 years. So that tells you where we're headed with the helium resource. Of course, helium is mostly used largely in MRI machines, and they're absolutely critical for them. There had been talk of being able to re-engineer MRI machines to not use helium, but no workaround has been found at this point. They're one of the biggest uses of helium in the United States, even beyond party balloons. So next time you're thinking about having a party, maybe opt not for a helium balloon, even though you may want to make a funny voice, and substitute it with something else so that you can help preserve our helium reserves. The folks at Dell made a 70-inch touchscreen for schools, and you know, based on my experience recently with a lot of Dell-made monitors, they're really rocking it. Now, this particular whiteboard or classroom monitor, the 70-inch touchscreen, the C7017T, is designed to replace interactive whiteboards in schools and boardrooms. This is not for a home system because it only has a 1080p resolution, but it can handle a 10-finger touch and includes two pens for collaborative sessions. More importantly, it's downright frugal compared to Microsoft's 84-inch Surface Hub. Dell has a $5,000 price tag on it that doesn't include a computer, but it's still going to take a much smaller bite out of a school budget as compared to a Surface Hub device. So very, very cool. 70-inch. Strap it on the wall and teach. 25,000 malware-riddled CCTV cameras have been crashing people's websites. So, a very unusual 25,000 strong botnet was spotted by U.S. security firm Outfits Security when investigated in an online assault against an ordinary jewelry store. The shop's website was flooded offline after drowning in a 35,000 junk HTTP request per second. And when security tried to thwart the network tsunami, the botnet stepped up its output and dumped more than 50,000 requests per second on the store's website. As they investigated it, they tracked it back to, you know, compromised CCTV cameras. Wow. Which specific ones were they? Oh, these are apparently all over the world. So there's 25,513 unique IPs. And did they say what type of CCTV camera it was? No, it didn't tell, but basically a lot of system administrators probably aren't high in the priority list of patching CCTV. I'm sure most of them run on similar code. All right, iPhone 7 rumors. Again, another rumor that the headphone jack is going to go away. And I've got mixed feelings about this because when I'm on Bluetooth, it just seems that the Bluetooth connection, the longer you talk, the worse it gets. And I've had Bluetooth connections where, like, the phone's on my table, the Bluetooth device is in my ear, and you know, my audio levels are all over the place. So I have went strictly, especially doing conference calls and meetings, to not be on Bluetooth. I've strictly been on a wired headset, just using a little quarter-inch plug, you know, the small mini jack plug, and a headset with a microphone, and it's much, much better. So if the iPhone 7 removes the headset jack, I might have a hard time upgrading to the iPhone 7. Do you guys have the same problem? You guys have the same issue with Bluetooth? And it just doesn't seem to, and also, you know, the Bluetooth hands-free headsets, it seems like they last about 6 months at the most. You know, I've got a pile, you know, small pile of dead, not even dead, unworkable Bluetooth headsets. And I guess it's their way of keeping us coming back and buying them. And believe it or not, the cheap ones, the $16 to $20 ones, work as good or better than the very expensive $100 ones that you can buy online that are so highly rated. And it's really kind of disgusting from, I'm just telling you, for a guy that's gone through a lot of Bluetooth headsets, just go with the cheap one. But in light of this, in light of the 3.5 millimeter jack maybe going away, what are you guys using? What have you had good luck with on Bluetooth headsets? What is your number one recommendation to me that said, Todd, you can't go wrong with this Bluetooth headset. I've had it for a year. It's worked great. It does great noise cancellation. I've had some Bluetooth headsets. I've been at airports before talking on the hands-free, and people can't hear the jets, you know, running up or taxiing around. I mean, it's really, really good. So what are you using out there? I'd love to hear your feedback, geeknews@gmail.com. Okay, let's see here. There's an article over on The Verge. And I know some of you have strong feelings about this, but the president, the people at The Verge are asking the president to consider pardoning Edward Snowden before he leaves office. I truly am against that happening. He needs to come home and face the music. Or he can continue living in Russia in exile. So, do you think Snowden should be pardoned by the president? Let's do a little straw poll here from the Ohana. Do you think he should just full pardon him and let him come home? This guy that has, broke his, in my opinion, is a traitor, having released all this classified information. And you guys know my history. You guys know I'm prior military, kind of sensitive to this kind of stuff. I know some of you don't agree with me, but, I'm quite frankly, I'm surprised he hasn't had three bullets to the back of the head yet already. I'm surprised they haven't knocked him off. I'm probably the reason they haven't knocked him off. He's probably got, stuff in reserve that will release if they do knock him off. But I don't think that either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump would pardon him at all. I don't think that she would be inclined, and I don't think Trump would either. I know Trump absolutely won't, but I'm pretty sure based on what Hillary Clinton said, that she wouldn't pardon him either. So he's got this small window for the president to do this, but I don't agree. And if he walks away scot-free from doing what he did, in my opinion, it would be a travesty. He's put American lives at risk for doing what he did, and mostly military people's lives at risk. So pretty sensitive to me. And I understand the argument. We don't have to rehash that, but I'm definitely against a pardon for that individual. And wish someone would do their, I'll be quiet. Hey, the NPAA, boy, they haven't made us angry in a while, but basically he's made a statement that actually being good to consumers would be horrible for Hollywood. And in a keynote address at Sign Europe, convention this week, MPAA Chairman and CEO Chris Dodd described the unblocking goals, and what they want to do in the EU is unblock, basically the EU not have unlock codes and stuff. Everybody in the EU be on an equal playing field for content. He described the unblocking goals as a threat to the movie industry, encouraged participants to reach out to the representatives. Dodd described concerns as real, very real. While the stated goals of these proposals are laudable, offering greater choice, listen to this, offering greater choice to European consumers and strengthening cultural diversity, in reality, these ideas could actually cause great harm to Europe's film industry and its consumers, Dodd said. It's not about that. The EU is made up of 28, maybe soon 27 different nations with different cultures, but the MBWA has different licensing and different agreements with all these folks. It's all about money. It's about who they can take the most money from. The ability of filmmakers and distributors to market and release their films where and how and when they think best gives them the greatest chance to succeed. No, it's not. It's about control. It's all about control. You know, in the EU, people are free to travel across borders. They can work in other countries with no issues. And the geo-blocking stuff is, I guess, for the EU doesn't make sense. I was asked by at least 10 of you for me to weigh in on the vote in the UK. And in my opinion, it's none of my business. I don't have a dog in the fight. But in the end, I think, and this is just my opinion on why the vote went the way it did, and you know, one of our writers is out of the UK, and he's highly distressed about the Leave vote, worried about young people not having jobs and so forth. I think what truly triggered the Leave vote is, and again, this is just my opinion, and again, I don't have a dog in a fight, but I think, and this is just my opinion, maybe not a super scientific one, but I think that folks in the UK, at least those that voted for Leave, don't want to see what happened to France happen to the UK by essentially migration, a lot of people migrating, wherever, people moving around. And you have the country being changed from the inside out. And I'm not saying that change isn't good, but change scares a lot of people. And when they see what's happening in France and other countries that have allowed a lot of immigrants in, it's changed the face of the country a great deal. Some people said that the immigration vote or the Leave vote was largely driven by immigration policy. And, you know, I think I agree. I'm sure there's a lot of other dynamics about it too. And again, I don't even claim to understand the social dynamics that are happening in the United Kingdom. It's hard enough to know what the heck's going on here in the United States. So one way or the other, it's not my... I don't have a dog in the fight, but just kind of looking at it from the outside in, that was just kind of my opinion. And again, I don't have a plus or minus either way, but I think that's just how it works, you know. And I think we're seeing some of that same stuff, that same concerns here in the United States. That's what's driven the popularity of the conservative candidate. Is people think the fabric of the country is changing. I think that's part of it. I really, really do. And some people, well, that's racist. I'm sure that's what people are going to say. But I don't think you can get away from those dynamics no matter what. Okay, anyway. Well, that's way too close to the political stuff. So I'll leave and move on here. That's talking about immigration, talking about people coming to the United States. U.S.-bound tourist social media accounts are subject to inspection. The U.S. federal government has taken another step, it says, would make U.S. homeland safer from terrorism. U.S. border authorities are proposing, I guess it's not approved yet, that millions of tourists entering the country each year reveal their social media identities. I don't know how they enforce this. I really don't. But the proposal from the U.S. Customs Border Protection announced last week in the Federal Register would add a line to the online or paper form that U.S.-bound visitors fill out if they don't have a visa and plan on staying up to 90 days for vacation, business, or other affairs. The agency say travelers to come to the U.S. under the visa waiver program won't be forced to disclose their social media handles, but leaving it blank could raise red flags. Here's what they will be asked. Please enter the information associated with your online presence, provider, platform, social media identifier. This field doesn't call for additional information such as passwords, but likely yield many if applicants aren't paying attention and overshare. So I guess they're going to say, okay, what's your Twitter account? @GeekNews. What's your Facebook account? Facebook.com/Cochran. You know, and what that really does is gives the customs folks an instant look into your past history. So, you know, you basically come in, you present your passport, they scan it, and, you know, that comes up clean. If the agent has a little bit of, I'm not sure about this individual, and they load up their computer screen, they load up their social media profile. They go on Twitter, they read the last 2 months worth of tweets that you made, and if you've made an anti-American statement, blah, 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 or whatever you've, maybe that immigration agent wants now to have some deeper questions with you, or, you know, if it's a lot of people come here in a visa to visit the country, yet are engaged to marry someone, and they're not coming here on a spousal visa. And if they say, oh, you're coming here to see Johnny, your boyfriend, it's been, you know, you guys been together for 2 years. Are you coming to get married? And that could raise red flags too. But I don't know. I don't think any other country asks for social media accounts. Israel does a pretty deep dig on you, but they do it through question and answer. What are you doing here? How long are you staying? Why are you here? And they ask that same question maybe 2 or 3 times. You know, I'll be honest with you, I've traveled so many places. I can't think of the toughest immigration questions or where I was questioned the most. Maybe going into the Philippines one time, but that was when I was still in the Navy and had to present orders. And we travel on a brown passport versus a blue when you're traveling on official orders. And more likely just putting sofa stamps and all that stuff in. So I don't think I've ever really had a grilling by a customs guy. Now I've had a serious grilling by, the inspectors when I come back, when they're looking for stuff that, you know, I'm bringing in from outside the country. I have had my suitcase tore down to parade rest, never been fined for anything. Long as you declare, you're good. But the second you go and not declare and they find something, they just tear in. So when you're coming back from vacation, do not lie on that customs form. Hey, a hobbyist has built a tiny working model of the reusable Falcon 9 rocket. And this is pretty cool. I'll have the link up in the show notes. And basically, he made a rocket drone. It's not quite what you think, but I will admit it's pretty cute. There's a little bit of discussion going on Apple's new auto unlock feature and how they're going to basically protect your Mac from inadvertently being unlocked by someone that opens your MacBook when you are still in the same room. And they're using basically speed of light and taking a measurement off of your iWatch and seeing how, and it's basically a speed of light thing. And if they're spoofing and you're, you know, 50 miles away, it's going to know how long it took for that authentication signal to get your watch and back. So they're using some basic math to protect your MacBook from being unlocked if you're across the room. So that's some pretty serious tech going on there, and it's going to be very interesting to watch how that really works. Be aware that the new Crypt XXX ransomware is out there, and it's been cooking. They've raised as much as $45,000 in the last 3 weeks. They've been making some serious revenue with this new version. Of course, you basically have to pay up bitcoins or else. And so just be careful what you're clicking out there, Ohana. There's something new on Facebook. It's called Slideshow. Livens up your photos and videos. So your weekend trip should be looking a little more exciting. If you've snapped some photos, you can create a mini slideshow in a post. So that's kind of cool. I've always kind of, picked two or three images and put them in a Facebook post. And sometimes you want to put more, but it's kind of a burden. This kind of lightens that up. Hey, the Tour de France. Officials are going to be scanning the bikes to check for cheaters. Basically, they're going to be looking for motors. This is interesting. So they're going to have their bike scanned for concealed electric motors and batteries. They plan to conduct between 3,000 and 4,000 tests, the Union Cyclist International said today. That's very, very interesting. So, of course, that was a big scandal here a while back. Hey, if you have how many of you, I know some of you out here have, they're listening to the show, have type 1 diabetes. And we have some close family friends. I have some close family friends as well that, I think I said that twice, who have type 1. A lot more people, obviously, with type 2. The type 1 folks, you know, they're getting poked on it, you know, multiple times a day just to keep that, that glucose level right. But researchers at University of Cambridge have discovered one more reason why dogs are great. Their superior sense of smell is inspiring advances in the medical field. In a study published today in Diabetes Care, the research determined that during a hypoglycemic attack, people with type 1 diabetes, the amount of natural occurring chemical isoprene in a person's breath increases, and dogs can smell that chemical. So they got a cool video of this lady who has got a dog that can detect this elevated level of isoprene, and it shows her her care dog beside her bed, and he's actually alert. It's dark. The dog's not asleep. He's paying attention to his patient, and all of a sudden he kind of reacts, and his signal is to basically put his paws on the person's chest. And if you're somewhere, he kind of jumps up on you a little bit, just with the front paws. But in this instance, you can see him kind of get up on the bed a little bit and start pawing a little bit at the person that's got type 1 diabetes. Really very cool. So now they think that based upon the sugar level and this increase of isoprene, that they may be able to build a mechanical device that will actually do the same thing. So that's what they're working on next, so that someone could wear something around their neck, maybe a type of a device where they would blow into it, kind of like you would from a sobriety check type thing, where you give a sample to see where you're at in the spectrum. So it's not going to replace sticking yourself, but at least will tell you when you're maybe getting close to a hypoglycemic. And it's very, very dangerous for folks that get into that that situation. Hey, Google has brought high-resolution imagery to Earth and Maps. That's being rolled out. So every few months, Google kind of ups the resolution account. I wonder if they have to go to the government and ask permission to do that. That's something we'd ought to look into. Volkswagen is paying $14.7 billion to settle its diesel claim in the United States. Wow. This would be one of the largest consumer class action settlements ever in the United States. The proposed settlement involving federal government and lawyers for the owners of about 475,000 vehicles. So this could end up, they're saying, be the cash compensation will range from $5,100 to $10,000. I know a guy that's got two Volkswagens. He's got a Jetta and whatever the model is. He's already got $1,000 for each vehicle. So I wonder if he's going to miss out on this, because one of his vehicles is diesel. So I wonder if he's missing out, if he's already signed away. I don't know, but $5,100 to $10,000. I'll have to email this to him and say, did you already give up some cash? maybe he did. Hey, drone operators, please, when there is a fire, especially when it's, you know, one of those big, massive fires that you see in California and out west, keep your drones grounded. Don't be flying around where the firefighters are. Again, three drone incidents forced air crews to land. So please, please, please stop. Don't do that. Don't be flying around where these fires are. It's as tempting as it is. Just please don't do it. Passengers filmed from inside a Singapore Airlines flight as it burns. Now, you guys know I spent 20 years flying on airplanes. I've had engine fires. I've had mechanical issues. But I have never seen a wing on fire before. And this Singapore airline, if I'd have been on that plane, my freak out factor would have been a 10. You know, because I'm watching this 49-second video, and I think there's some longer ones out there, but the plane has landed, and probably oil from the engine. It's just where they landed because of low oil pressure. Probably oil's gotten across the airframe, but it starts a fire, and it gets into, for you folks that aren't really too familiar with aviation, when the flaps come up, there's a flap well. And in there's all kinds of mechanicals. There's wires. There are usually hydraulic lines used, but they're not. They're metal. They're not made out of rubber. There's, but usually that area can get kind of grimy, not necessarily dirty, but just grimy. But this fire gets into that flap well, and it's pretty exciting. I would not want to be on the side of the airplane where this is happening. Now, obviously, the fire trucks got there, foamed it out, but this 777 definitely burned in a way that I don't expect it should. Jack, I'm sure you're going to see this video and flip out. If you were the captain, you know, would have you started evacuating people out the other side? Now, when, you know, as in the Navy, when there was a engine fire, let's say it was, because I flew on four engine aircraft, let's say it was, on the port, that would be on the left-hand side of the aircraft. We would, basically, if we were on the runway, we would pull the emergency E-handles, which shuts down all motors. It kills, it fuel chops them. As soon as the prop would stop spinning, we would pop the overhead hatch, and on the opposite side of the aircraft, we would evac. They would lower the flaps, and we would just slide down the wing. Of course, on a 777, you can't do that because you're a little bit high off the ground. But on the airplanes I could, it was like a 5-foot drop, so not too far. And then you would haul butt and, of course, try to not get run over by the emergency equipment. On this aircraft, they did not deploy on the left-hand side of the aircraft any of the escape slides or anything. Maybe they were worried about crossover and taking out the slides. I don't know, but the crew and the passengers sat in the airplane, watched this thing burn until the fire department could come put it out. But I'm sure a few scary minutes for those folks. All right, we're getting down here to the end tonight. A lot of stuff I've covered. I don't need to cover that. We already talked about it. Hey, if you are, it appears that the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum is on tomorrow is going to be opening up a Star Trek exhibit. And so they're going to have all kinds of stuff to see. I think you get to see the actual flight deck and a whole bunch of stuff too. So that's going to be available in D.C. So if you're in the nation's capital, plan on going and seeing the Star Trek exhibit. Very, 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 very cool stuff. All right. Skip that. We're running out of time. Hey, a lady who had a Windows 10 update against her will has won a $10,000 judgment against Microsoft for the forced upgrade. Basically, her computer become really unusable, and she basically got sick and tired of trying to work with the Microsoft support and sued them, and Microsoft settled for $10,000. Good on her. Okay, last three articles are on our little bit of paranormal side. It's been reported at Graceland that Elvis has been spotted. He has been spotted because they think he is a groundskeeper. And what really got Elvis fans tipped off was they were videotaping this area, and this guy did some sort of V symbol when he scratched his ear. And I guess that was something that Elvis did in a specific way, and this groundskeeper did it. So they're saying Elvis is alive. If he has, he's lost some weight. Also, a UK company has created Comet Perfume. A perfume company in the UK has concocted a new secret scent, which will use data from the ESA's Philae probe to replicate the smell of a comet. The Roman company was commissioned by the space agency to develop the perfume for a science exhibition next month. So what is this going to smell like? It's a scent. It's a common... Oh, ladies, you're going to want to get this. Especially if you have someone that you want to get rid of. Or fellas, you can wear this too. But this perfume smells like cat urine, rotten eggs, and bitter almonds. So are you actually going to be able to smell this and be able to handle it, to even put it on yourself without puking? Yeah, cat urine, rotten eggs, and bitter almonds. Just what I want to wear. Hey, infrared camera zooming over a volcano in Mexico captured remarkable footage of a fleet of UFOs that left viewers guessing as to their nature. The incident culled from a live stream video of Popocatépetl volcano begins around 25 seconds in the footage when a handful of glowing orbs come into view. I'm looking at the orbs, and they kind of look like headlights to a car. You'll watch it. It'll be kind of cool. So I'll leave my commentary at that. So that's the weird news that we have seen via the paranormal websites. All right, let me look here what we have for comments that have come into the show. All right, I got to load that. I got to click this. And today is the 27th. Got an email from Henry. He says, "Aloha, Todd. The self-driving car dilemma as to who should be saved in an accident has been called the Karbayashi Maru. The choice does not have to be made when the car is built. The easiest solution for this is to have a setting in the car that the rider could set. A young mother or father with their kids in the car may want one setting, where a senior citizen with no living family may want another. You also may want a third setting for the mother-in-law." And he gives me a little smiley sign. "Thanks for many years of informative podcast, Henry out of Livonia, Michigan." So my wife might actually like that mother-in-law setting. Mom, I know you're listening. You're probably shaking your head. Yes. So interesting to have a different setting. So, okay, got the kids in the car. We run over the person. If it's just me in the car by myself, the car crashes itself into the wall. If it's the mother-in-law in the car, you take the hit, you allow the hit on the passenger side to happen, right? Who knows? But that's an interesting concept. I think most people would be like, run them down. I don't think anyone would, in all honesty, this, oh yes, let's make the setting so the car crashes and I'm killed versus the other person. But I think most people, and maybe I'm judging humanity wrong, but I think they might just say, run them over. You know, I just wonder if we'd be allowed to actually set the setting. You know, that makes, maybe what it should be, it's randomized. You get in the car and you don't know what you get. You turn the car on and it spins the wheel. And if you don't get in an accident that trip, you've missed the one where the car was instructed to take you out versus taking the other person out. So only time will tell on how this all shakes down. It's something we'll have to address as we move in. All right, let's look at, is this the last one? I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. All right, folks, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, on Twitter, @geeknews. Sorry about not having all the visuals up tonight. We'll figure out what happened there. Probably had something still set from a different setting position for the podcast awards ceremony. But it's been my pleasure to bring the show to you. I'll be back with you on Thursday, and then starts the trip back and we'll actually go see my son for a few days, go to Chicago for Podcast Movement, and then my mom's going to bring Chris to Chicago, then we fly home and we're back here on my wife's birthday, I think. Yeah, we actually get home not on my wife's birthday, on my mom's brother's birthday. So we get back here on July 9th. But no shows the week of July 4th. So you'll be without me. Hey, everyone, thanks for being here. Geeknews@gmail.com again. And, of course, follow me on Twitter @geeknews or come over to Facebook or wherever you may be. Everyone, take care. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time here on the Geek News Central podcast. Everyone, take care. Aloha.